So even though the bacteria are very small, add them all together and about 2 kilograms of your human body weight is bacteria. That's a lot of bacteria. I think they get a bad rap. People just think of, antibiotics, antibacterial, this and that. And it's really terrible. Because most of the bacterial kingdom is just there to help us. They're wonderful. Whenever you have compost or anything that needs to be decayed, who's doing that? Bacteria. They line your digestive tract, and any bad bug that gets in there is going to have to fight for space to bind and then get into you. So as long as you have a good coating on your intestine, that's a big protective mechanism. And if I see anyone using antibacterial soap, I will probably slap them.
Why do you ferment?
The easy answer is just that it's a way of getting live food. And when you go into the research, there's all sorts of micronutrients. But what's more important to me is the many traditions that it upholds.
I think what gets me excited about fermenting is you take two things that may be wonderful on their own, say cabbage and salt, and you put them together and it becomes something that's so much better and better for you. It's like this miracle, and it's just basically rotting on your counter.
When you get into the world of fermenting, you realize that really it's happening all around you. It's a couldn't be a more natural process.
I don't know. Look at that weird texture. It looks very slimy.
It's kind of cool. Do you think you could do anything with that, you could ferment that mold on the surface of the miso and turn it into some other crazy batshit East Van thing?
I think you should try it. I'm willing to donate this mold slime to you.
It's kind of like you have a little science experiment that it's in your kitchen, and I really like to cook, and I really like to kind of combine different things and try new things. And I think with fermentation, it's like you always have something new, and every day it changes. And then at the end of the 7 days, you have something completely different than when you started.
No matter what the reasons are behind your fermenting projects, it's pretty obvious that all these crazy yeasts and bacteria and fungi and scobies, they're gonna do their own thing anyway and multiply into the billions. So if you can't beat them, join them.
Why do you ferment? Because I live. My body's fermenting all the time. So is yours. You just think about all those anaerobic bacteria that are living in your gut and chewing on whatever you chewed on. We are all fermenters.
Thanks for making it to the end of the second episode of Life After Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Fun!
While
Fun
cloaks itself in a plethora of disguises, its favorite mantle still remains
Fun. Fun
devours all it touches, its voracious appetite rarely fulfilled. Yet
Fun
doesn't only destroy, it creates and molds as well. Let's examine closely then this dangerously evil creation, this new breed. But a word of caution, handle it with care, and don't drop your guard. This rapacious new breed prowls both alone and in packs, operating at any level, any time, anywhere, and with anybody. Who are they?
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Challenge. Visit spca.bc.ca for more information. Puppy
love. From Riffs by Dennis Lee. When I lurched like a rumor of want through the networks of plenty, a me-shaped pang on the lamb, when I ghosted through lives like a headline, a scrap in the F-draft, and my midlife wreckage was close and for keeps, when I watched the birches misting pale spring voltage and not mine, nor mine, nor mine, then a lady laid her touch among me, gentle thing for which I stand still startled, gentle thing, and feel the ache begin again, the onus of joy. Listening to Audio Text on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. It's a little Malajube for you in the background, reminding me of my quasi-roots in Montreal. I'm Julie Peters, and I'm here to host for you this show on Canadian writing. Today's show is a little bit different than some of the shows I've had in the past. As I was mentioning last week, I was just on my way to go to Edmonton for a conference on poetry. The name of the conference was Poetries of Numerousness. And it was a really interesting event. There were a lot of really interesting papers going around, and I got to meet one of my favorite, well, two of my favorite poets, actually, Aaron Murray and Steve McCaffrey, who I'm going to be featuring on the show today. And so what I want to talk about today is that idea of numerousness, I guess, and the sort of things that poetry can do that you don't always expect. I think that you know, sometimes poetry tries to represent for us an experience in our lives, and language can only go so far in doing that. A poem can only tell us so much about our lives because we are all individuals and we all have such specific, particular experiences. So that idea of sort of the particular and getting almost beyond language to give an experience, if not a representation of what someone might be thinking or feeling. So a lot of the poetry that we were talking about is quite sort of, you know, quote-unquote academic. It's a little bit hard to understand. You don't really know what the point is. The words are kind of, sometimes they're nonsense words. They don't really mean anything. But what they are actually about is still the feeling that you hear in some of the spoken word poetry that I've been playing for you on the show previously. They're the same, but different. You know, they're different ways of getting at the same feeling or emotion. So I was reading a paper there entitled Making Love to the Words and Getting Jilted, My Textual Affair with Steve McCaffrey. Cheeky little bunny that I am, I partly decided to read this paper at this particular conference because Steve McCaffrey was going to be the keynote speaker, one of the keynote speakers. And I sort of half hoped that he would come and see my paper and half hoped he would be nowhere to be seen. Not only did he come, but he was sitting right there in the front row. While I explained that reading Steve McCaffrey was less like reading and something, like reading something sort of objectively in that kind of experience, but having, like, entering into a monogamous relationship with the poet. So I was making all these puns about, you know, textual intercourse and linguistic booty calls and stuff. And everybody was laughing in the room, but I was sweating bullets. And I actually had to go change before dinner afterwards because I smelled like sheer unadulterated terror when I was done. But the paper did actually go really well, and Steve McCaffrey really enjoyed it. And we later went on to drink wine together, and he told me dirty stories, and it was really lovely. So I did get a recording of him, which I'm going to be playing soon. It's like a really prime example of what Steve McCaffrey can do on the stage with his poetry. Before we get to all that, of course, I'm going to give you some listings. Lots going on in this lovely, fine city of Vancouver in terms of spoken word and poetry. Today is Wednesday, May 20th. And at Montmartre Cafe, which is on Main Street, there's a Writers in the Round, which happens monthly. It's readings, music, and an open mic hosted by Kate Polsky. On Wednesday, today also Wednesday, May 20th, at the Cottage Bistro, Steve Miller, who you've heard on the show before, is having a kind of multimedia event. He's mixing his poetry with costumes and, you know, extra people and apparently fire. So that should be a really interesting one. That's at the Cottage Bistro around 8 p.m. Tomorrow, Thursday, May 21st, at GAP Adventures, which is at 1965 West 4th Avenue, at 6:30 p.m., Tony Greenfield is going to be reading from his new book, Waterfalls from British Columbia. Also tomorrow, May 21st, at the UBC Bookstore in Robson Square, Indran I'm your Thanayagan. I was trying not to do that thing when people are trying to pronounce things and they go really slowly and it just sounds ridiculous. Excuse my pronunciation. This is a Tamil poet, an American diplomat, a polyglot, and a world traveler, and he's going to do one final poetry reading before moving to Peru this summer. So a rare opportunity to go check out at the UBC bookstore tomorrow night. Well, there's yet another event, Thursday, May 21st. It's the first Mashed Poetics. This is at Cottage Bistro. R.C. Wislowski and Spilius, who are two poets that you've heard before on this show as well, are hosting a spoken word mashup of Black Sabbath's Paranoid. So if you're one of those people who thinks that spoken word poetry is all about berets and snapping, this event, if none other, will definitely prove you wrong. Saturday, May 23rd, at the Presentation House Theatre, which is 333 Chesterfield Avenue in North Van, Confessions of a Storyteller is the name of the show. It's a one-man improvised storytelling show by Dave Morris, who's going to be drawing inspiration from the audience and his own personal life and weaving them together to tell stories. Tickets for that are $12 or $10, so go check that out if you're in North Van on Saturday evening. Also Saturday, May 23rd, at Café du Soleil, Awesome Face is having their third show, I believe. It's Awesome Face 3002, a face odyssey. And Awesome Face is made up of Chris Gilpin, R.C. Wislowski, and Brendan McLeod. Again, all poets you've heard on this show before. It's sort of a multimedia band, spoken word kind of event thing. A kids' show for adults, worth checking out for sure. It's always a good time. Whenever they have a show, that's at Café du Soleil on Saturday. And Monday, May 25th, at the Roundhouse Community Center, there's going to be a sixth anniversary of World Poetry. It's Explorasian, so that should be kind of a fun thing on that Monday evening. And as always, there's going to be a poetry slam at Café du Soleil. It's a youth slam this week, and it's going to be featuring the mighty Mike McGee, who you may have heard of, also big star of the spoken word world. There we go. So there you go, a bunch of things to do over the next week in the city. Go and check them all out, support the community if you like what you hear on things like this show. So next up, I'm going to have a recording from Aaron Moray's reading at the Poetries of Numerousness conference this past weekend in Edmonton. She is a translator, but she has a kind of a really specific philosophy on what translation means. It's not sort of transliteration. It's translating emotion or experience from one piece of poetry to another. And so she has a few things to say about that. And then she shares a poem that both in Galician, which is a dialect of Portuguese, or it's closely related to Portuguese, and then she does it in English. And I thought it would be kind of nice, too, to hear a little bit of a different language. I thought it was just lovely to be there in the room with her listening to this. So here's a little excerpt from that.
I was looking at a statement that I'd written last year, I guess, about my work, and I was just going to read a little bit from it, or see if I can read a little bit from it, just to introduce what I will then do, which is read a selections of things across probably five books, two of which are two books by the Galician poet Jesus Pato, who I discovered in 2000 and started translating from Galician into English just because I wanted to bring her poetry into my own literature, into Canadian literature. Unfortunately, it's extremely hard to get translations of poetry published in Canada because there's no institutional support for it or no grant support. In fact, there's an active discouragement of it as a practice, but it's... So I'd have to publish the books first in England. And then by doing that, then John Buschek can somehow get a few copies over here and put his barcode on them, and they can be sold in Canada, which is really nice since that's where I wanted them to be read in the first place. So I just read a bit out of this this statement here. I cough occasionally, but I don't have swine flu. As I was telling Adam, I still have SARS. Are always complex and inflected. For a subject is a subject across many parameters, many smudges, hesitations, and crossings. And actually, I'm an allergic poet. Because at times I need to protect myself from other people and from substances. And I need to do that more than anything else. In a sense, I've been called a postmodernist as well, and I am in the sense that I recognize in my work a resistance working within the modern. And by saying that, you can see I'm a Lyotardian too. My definition of postmodernism is one that I share with Jean-François Lyotard. And further, I have a resistance to other resistance practices when these just simplify or flatten in order to aggrandize a self and build up a self or construct a self within an era that's set against other eras. I'm a political poet, I think, in the sense that poetry is of the civis and can move it, if only by wearing it at the edge, because someone reads it. And a theorist, I'm not a theorist, I'm a theatralist. I don't have a theory, I just try to combine and see. I think that possibly poetry is the right place to conduct philosophy and to create conduits to think. And that acts in language are civic acts. That writing is for me about risk and not about comfort. For me, poetics moves across the borders of a language and into languages. Thought processes and emphases are different in a different language. In different languages, I exit from I exit from you. I am another. Languages and multiply in my learning of them are a way of listening to the other so as to speak. And as such, translation is part of my practice. It's not an adjunct activity. And in a sense, the work of translation is a reading practice. Translations are fundamentally reading practices. What you have in a translation is tus pato, but it's also tus pato inflected through my subjectivity, you have my reading practice of tus pato here more than you have tus pato. In any case, so that I think mine is a poetics of encounter with the other and a poetics of hospitality. And it's in that sense that being a poet of an encounter with the other and hospitality, that I wanted to read first a poem that's curiously from Little Theatres called Soidade, which is the Galician word. It means loneliness, I guess, or forsakenness. And this poem, in fact, I just want to dedicate I want to say the memory of Robin Glaser, but I don't want to say that. I want to say to Robin Glaser. Anyways, I'm going to read it in Galician for Robin, and then I'll read it in English for you. And we can all have our forsakenness that way. Sempre nella mia vita faltami algo, un alento. Desde sempre devo apprendere la terra. Io queria para agradecerle la terra o seu alento. Se la rancha, cerca las cedones, para cantarme al sol. Siempre en mi vida envejaba yo la cedoria. ¿Cómo podía algo tan rancha sentir tristeza? Y la rancha se ve que nunca vemos. Se la rancha, por lo menos una vez, y nunca más vivir con tristuras. Levarmi destas, por fin, e tocar o solo con a miña cara, escoitar o alento da terra. So that, all my life I've had a tough time breathing. I get scared and feel alone, me and the earth. Which me is it talking in the first person? Should I get up? But I want to lie down. Sometimes all I have is water gulped with air and cut into every membrane. I try not to let it make me sad. I just say, which me is it talking in the first person? That as long as a carrot can be orange, I'm going to be orange too. I'm not going to live with sadnesses. But free myself, llevo mis vestiduras de vida misma, and touch my face to the soil. And breathe with the breathing of the earth. That's not an eco-poetic poem, by the way. It's all about being dead.
favorite cardigans, pants, jackets, and underwear.
The Friends of CITR card scores you discounts at Antisocial, Berku's Angels, and Hits Boutique.
Uzbekistan Prints or Rajasthan Colors.
Support CITR Radio and pick up your card today.
So that was Erin Murray just before that PSA. So I hope you got a little bit of the sense of distance there and different things that you can do with language that aren't always just, you know, saying what you feel in a really obvious way. You know, she gets a very sort of intense emotional connection with a poet from Galicia, and she translates them into her own experience in English, which I just find really interesting. Next, something quite different, but as I said, different but the same. It's sort of trying to get at a feeling or something through these different ways of writing, and that's sort of what I'm trying to express to you today. So as promised, Steve McCaffrey, one of my absolute favorite poets, who I obsessed over for a couple of months when I was writing that paper, partly because he does things like this.
This is a Zaum acrostic and telestic with an appendix for Marjorie Perloff's 70th birthday. Zaum, for people who don't know, is the Russian futurist transrational language invented by Alexei Krochoynik. So the letters running vertically at the beginning and end of the line spell out Marjorie Gabrielle Perloff. So.
This is why we're glad we can listen to this kind of stuff on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Again, you're listening to Audio Text here on CITR. I'm Julie Peters. So there's a little taste of some of the poetry that I was listening to over this conference. And on the same panel that I was reading my paper at, another scholar by the name of T.L. Cowan read her paper, which was culled from her thesis, which is a 350-page document on spoken word, which I found fascinating because I have my master's in English literature and now I'm very much a part of the spoken word community here in Vancouver. And I was sort of surprised to discover that there's a certain rivalry that's discernible, at least by some, between the sort of academic poetic world and the world of spoken word poetry. I don't think that's really true, that people have necessarily a rivalry about it, but there's definitely a difference there, and there's a certain assumptions on both sides that, spoken word is sort of accused of being full of people who don't read poetry, you know, of being, you know, too comfortable with the formally insensible end rhymes and just sort of representing a feeling or emotion in a way that is actually quite ingenuine some of the time. Whereas poetry coming from the ivory tower is going to be too inaccessible for a community to gather around, which is, of course, the important thing about poetry, depending on your perspective. It's pretentious, as it were. So I definitely see parts of both critiques happening. It was really interesting to hear this paper about that. For example, I was at a spoken word writing workshop recently, and I've just been thinking about how much I wanted to bring some of my spoken word friends with me to the conference, and how I wanted to bring some of the conference people with me to a spoken word event. I was thinking about a time during a writing workshop when someone was writing quite a soft, delicate poem about sort of misogyny and women's gender issues and women's bodies. I said, you can't use the word grape. He used the word grape at the end of the poem, and I said, you can't do that. The word starts with gur and ends with rape. You can't use this word in this poem. And everyone at the workshop thought I was crazy. But as I was learning at the conference, especially from some people who've worked with Christian Book, words and letters and sounds have an affective effect. They kind of create emotions and feelings without necessarily being attached to the meaning of the word itself. So soft A sounds will have a certain effect, and, you know, plosives like P's and K's, and like that's why the word fuck is so kind of powerful, because of how it sounds, not what it means, though that's connected, of course. So this was something that I thought was really interesting, and so I thought that I would bring some of this academic poetry with me on the show today. And just to end off, I'm going to read from my absolute favorite poet, Dennis Lee, who you heard a little bit of at the beginning of the show, because I think that he does both of these things really well. He creates a really beautiful sound that's quite accessible that you can hear, but he's also got a really interesting philosophy behind it, and it's definitely not unselfconscious poetry. So this is just an excerpt from his long poem, Riffs. It's a love poem and a breakup poem all at the same time. So continuing on from the one that I read this at the beginning of the show. Yep. This is how it happens. You do your half-smile, serious and bantering both, and right on cue my insides cave in. They go immaculately wingy. Now it's coming back. We're apart 6 hours and there's this gravitational yank across the city. I would drive through walls to get near you, just to be near you. And also the way my body glow matches your body glow, or how you flicker with panic at being held, and I get the empathy bends exactly like I'm supposed to. Been a long time. I'd forgotten. Give me more. Ho-hum, you said, so soon attuned to ecstasy. Ho-hum, as if to say, 2 weeks ago we barely knew the peaks existed. Now they're rear-view postcard vistas. Ho-bloody-hum, till I crack the perfect hubris-sectory code. Already it's too good to last. Better tempt fate fast. Take it for granted and pass. Zip past. Zip past. They mock at me, poor sensibles. This time it's gonna hurt. But I can't change their pygmy minds. Sweet splash of dynamite just graze on me and you the way we do in late 20th century Eden entry high. Rare old rendezvous on Earth. Why else are we here? When you present your body and being an utterly bright-eyed companion, and when we go deep into one another's eyes and the swim of communion is ancient, ancient and grave, or when you speak not just of love but of impediments to loving, and even that serious caution inflames me, delicate scrunch of your shoulders, probe of your moral concern, How can such gifts undo me? Why does my system declare, ha, they'll never get out of paradise alive? But she's gone. She's an ocean away, and what is she dreaming? Sweet Christ, you are lovely, over and over. Tonight I can nearly taste it. Track of your hopscotch, your quicksilver trace in my mind. Wry-bracketed giggle that triggers an ache at the core. And over, new sister and stranger, your born-again flow on my tongue. Why aren't you here? So I'll cook some thump and witness, raise a bumper car in the dictionary, make up a real-life us at play in the garden of words. Remember? Those perfect conversations with their lazy clarity uncoiling, skin still homing to skin, confederate across a room full of chatter, and fit of a life to a lifetime, sedulous, incredulous, and okay, downright smug as we basked around the block, two nerds in a blurt of summer. Doesn't anybody know, we ask, not about us, about acres of luminous storefronts, camouflaged as storefronts, the sky in drag as sky, as blue as itself, and free for the taking, all dirt and secrets of newly indigenous earth. Plus our non-stop gut bucket grins, heaven con carne. Hot potato mama, got you in my mouth all night. Absentee lady, land a living, I could pay my rent all year and still owe dues. Some kind of stunt and wonders, hocus focus, hot cross, nerve ends. Come on, nice lady, we ain't got all lifetime. Indefatigably adored one, pleased to appear on the sheet right now, called up by succulent, shrink-wrapped, wholly refundable me. So that was just a selection from Dennis Lee's Riffs, published by Brick Books. You can get it at the bookstore and keep it all for yourself if you want to. Thanks for listening to Audio Text today. As always, I'll be back with some more kind of spoken word style stuff, a little bit away from the academic next week. Maybe I'll trick you and bring something else. It's always a little different here on Audio Text, and I appreciate your listening. If you want to podcast the show, you can do that at citr.ca. And if you want to email me for any reason, I do really like love letters. That's my favorite thing to get in the mail. Please do email me at audiotextcitr@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.